Greetings, humans. You have entered the Command Zone, your destination for all aspects of Elder Dragon Highlander. Enjoy your stay.
Uno, dos, tres. Whoop, 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 whoop. Music, music, music coming in the top of the show. And we've arrived.
You know what I was thinking about last night for some reason? I was thinking about like how we always sing a song at the beginning of every episode.
Yeah.
And then we were playing Oath Draft, and I was looking at the waist, and it has the little diamond symbol. And I, for some reason, just stuck in my head all night was,
Rockefeller.
Shine bright like a diamond.
We are shining
beautiful
bright like a diamond.
Like diamonds in the sky. It just like over and over. And I don't know the words to that whole song, so then I could just only get that those three lines, and then I would just have to start over. It's maddening.
That is maddening. That happens sometimes with songs I never want to hear again. Like
Shine Bright Like a Diamond?
Shine Bright Like
a... always the songs you never want to hear again.
Yeah, exactly.
You never get an awesome song that you know all the words to stuck in your head because you would sing the whole song and then be done.
Yeah, that's right. Instead, you're just stuck in the endless chorus loop.
Yeah, because you don't know the rest of it, so you have to start over.
That is the best part
of
the song,
you never get to
though.
The end.
Yeah, it's true. Anyway, how's it going, everybody? You are listening to The Command Zone. I'm your host, Jimmy Wong.
How's it? It's Josh Lee Kwai.
And we have a special guest, Craig Blanchett.
What up? It's Craig Blanchett.
Back in the house again. Craig, it's been a long time since you've been on the show. Good riddance. I mean, so good to have you back.
Craig, this is what, six, seven times you've been on, maybe?
Yeah, something like that.
And we're going to keep it going.
Hell yeah, as we should.
We can get up to 10.
Love Commander.
We can get up to 10. If you're on 10, you're on basically 10% of our episodes.
Oh, that's true. We are getting close to episode 100.
Oh, crap. We got to think of what we're going to do for episode 100. Actually, I mean, if you guys have any ideas out there of what we should do for episode 100, we'd love to hear it. Because
we would.
We have some ideas of our own, but I don't know how.
Live EDH game.
Everyone keeps saying that. It's so hard to actually, like, we want an idea that we could actually pull off. I'm not saying we couldn't, but the logistics of that are tough.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, we'll see what happens. We have ideas kicking around in our heads, so they may come to fruition, they may not. But yeah, definitely let us know on Twitter, in comments, wherever, if you guys have any special ideas. I have a couple of special ideas that just kicked in my head, actually, right when we were talking about it. But
ooh, now I'm excited.
Yeah, well, you don't benefit directly off it.
I don't benefit directly off it?
No, because it's probably giveaway related.
Oh, it's prizes.
Yeah.
Well, we're definitely going to do that in episode 100, so make sure you don't miss it. But
it'd
be nice to do something special that we can't do all the time.
Exactly.
I don't know what that is.
Bring Craig Blanchett on the show.
Yeah.
All right. Let's get into the upkeep step. We have some announcements. Kitchen Table Fables. Guys, have you seen it yet? Did everyone in this podcast go and watch our new web series about Magic the Gathering?
They're short comedy sketches. They're 90 seconds long. It won't take you but a blink of an eye to go watch them. Go to our YouTube page, youtube.com/ The Command Zone Podcast.
You got it. You made it. Yep.
Jimmy gave me the look like, are you going to remember the URL?
We have to have Terry edit this? Are we getting to get there? Yeah, so we have three episodes, and you can watch them all in the playlist. Make sure you guys share them as well. That really helps out the show. And, you know, show them to a friend that even doesn't play Magic and see if they laugh at it, because I that's kind of our hope, is to bring people in that don't even know anything about Magic.
And, spoiler, can I say it? I'm just going to say it. We are in talks to do more.
In talks, yeah. We talked to the studio. They got back to us. They gave us some promising feedback.
And yep, so we're going through the green light process.
The studio is just the text messages between myself and Josh.
And Professor.
And Professor, yeah.
And some unnamed other Magic personalities.
Yeah, very exciting. Craig, have you seen them yet?
I have not. I remember what? You guys talking about
it. Get off the show.
Get off the show. Wait, Craig, start talking.
Okay, I'm going to go, guys.
Keep talking. Sorry. Yeah, that's right. I'm just turning down your microphone until you just can't even hear Craig anymore.
Craig, what'd you say?
What'd you say, Craig? We can't hear you.
So I thought they were really good.
Oh, he's back on the show, everybody.
Yeah, welcome back, Craig. Also, last week, you guys gave some great feedback for our Banworthy episode. Obviously, we knew that this was going to be a sort of a controversial topic. Don't worry, though. We don't have any effect on what cards get banned.
Yeah, we got a lot of comments and some emails saying, hey, guys, stop talking about those cards. I don't want them to get banned.
I know.
They're not. Don't worry. We don't have that kind of power.
I feel like it's like taboo, though, because I feel the same way. It's like I will hold myself back from saying that, like, Sarah Senden should be banned, you know, because it's like I don't want it to happen, so I don't want to say it, even though I just did.
You don't want to put it into the nether.
Exactly.
You just said it to, like, tens of thousands of people.
I know.
Okay, just
Soul Ring, too.
Well, Soul Ring, I think, actually should go. Listen,
Here's the thing. It opens up spots for your deck. So, like, I was kind of thrilled about the Prophet of Krufix because it was broken. You know what I mean? Like,
you were thrilled? I was thrilled, too.
I don't play blue-green too much, so I wasn't, like, it wasn't... And it doesn't really... Like, it goes in Infect decks, but it's not, like, an essential for an Infect deck.
Yeah, I wasn't thrilled about Prophet, but I was fine with it. I saw it coming. Listen, here's the key point. We didn't talk about a single card that the rules committee does not already know about. I promise.
Exactly.
They've already considered those cards. Anything we say is going to have no bearing on whether or not they ban it. So
that's why today's episode is exciting, though, because we're going to talk about cards that maybe the rules committee just doesn't think about.
Or that a lot of you out there hopefully don't know about or haven't played or haven't seen. Yeah, these are going to be the pet cards. We all have them. Those cards that we love. We put them in every deck. And then you notice when you play them, you realize at some point, wait, I'm like the only person in my playgroup that plays this card.
Yeah, I know. It's kind of silly.
Don't they know how awesome this card is?
Well, you don't want them to know because it's your pet card, not theirs.
That you draw it and you're like, I should probably do the ramp first, but this is just so cool.
There is this great feeling, though, when one of your pet cards starts to get adopted by the other players in your playgroup, and you're like, oh, yeah, you guys will learn. That card is awesome. And it's like, you're the trendsetter. You're the hipster.
That definitely happened with Fate Stitcher between us.
Yeah, Glacial Chasm, where I've started to see. There's a few there's a few of the cards. Swan Song, I think. I feel like, you know, for me personally, and there's other cards that have gone the other way, where I've been like, you know, from both of you, oh, man, I need to put that card in all my decks.
Yeah. What's that green enchantment you play that just pops creatures out?
Oh, every time somebody Pattern plays... of Rebirth.
Oh, man, that card's so good.
Well, Pattern of Rebirth,
also... Oh, right. You're talking about Lurking Predators.
Yeah, Lurking Predators.
That thing is just so much value anytime it's out.
Good card. Anyway, but before we get into our pet cards, Oath of the Gatewatch came out, and we're past
pre-release
weekend.
We have drafted a lot.
Yeah, it was great. We just sat around the table with six people, and we all bought product, and we were like, well, instead of just cracking boosters needlessly, let's just draft them, play a quick round, and then draft again.
And what was it? Awesome was we did a lot of two-headed giant, which was sweet. They obviously as we know, they developed a lot of this set to be around two-headed giant, and when we did it was so much fun with the surge and whatnot.
It definitely affected how I drafted 1v1
big time,
not in a good way.
The red blue and white black combo was just unbelievable.
That's how that was the thing. Two-headed giant super fun, but by the third one I was like, oh, everyone just builds the red blue or the blue based control deck with a lot of counterspells, and then some version of a black-white allies deck that's grindy and doesn't win by attacking. And those are the two decks that all teams build. In fact, we played a three-way two-headed giant, so six players, three teams of two, and every team had the same basic constructs of decks. I mean, there were slight differences because everybody opens different bombs, but and it was fun, but then that made me realize, oh, the two-headed giant format maybe doesn't have a lot of longevity because there's this one correct way it feels like to go.
Yeah, exactly.
But the draft format...
It's interesting. We've all had a little trouble with it so far.
Yeah, it took me a little while. I feel like we drafted again last night, and I feel like that was the first time where I was like, I felt like, okay, I get the format.
Yeah, same here.
But the first... We must have drafted it four or five times. Because like Jimmy was saying, we just would draft and then only play one round. And then draft again because we wanted to get as many reps in with the actual
also,
drafting.
Also, our decks, or at least my decks, almost every time were just utter garbage.
Yeah, they just felt like they weren't working together at all. I tried to do some stuff. I tried a red-white equipment deck, and that was kind of bad and didn't work. I tried a blue-red surge deck, which was cool, but it wasn't super, super powerful. I mean, it could win some games, but I don't think... against a real like solid deck. The good decks we know in the format now are black white allies and like
blue white flyers allies,
blue white flyers, blue black control. There's also a green white support deck that's pretty strong. I don't think the blue red surge deck could really beat a good version of any of those decks.
Yeah,
but it was cool. I mean, I was drawing extra cards, and you know, I had the Pyromancer's Assault out, and every second spell I'd do two damage. Problem is everything has three toughness.
Such a shame.
So you can't actually kill anything with that extra two damage. Anyway, super fun times. I like the draft format so far. It's super grindy, though.
Yep, it's grindy. Green got a big boost, I think, in Oath. And I'm still figuring it out. I did much better yesterday playing a three-color deck because I got two Pilgrim's Eyes. And I was like, well, I guess I'm splashing.
Well, and there's Unknown Shores. There's Holdout Settlement. And... There's
Wastes, Crumbling Vestige also.
Crumbling Vestige is okay, but there's a lot of Unknown Shores and Holdout Settlements. And I think, because last night I played a Converge sort of variant. It was mostly black-white allies, but also had green, also had blue. And because of those cards, I was able to play a lot of colors. And then the Converge cards get way better in the Battle for Zendikar pack. So that deck is super fun. I don't think it's like the most powerful. Like, it's not going to be a well-tuned black-white allies deck, but super fun.
Yeah, a lot of fun. Craig, how'd you do yesterday?
Did pretty good. I enjoy playing, like, splashing for the colorless. I keep getting stuck in, like, black-white, the allies deck, just because I got it for the pre-release. So in my sealed deck, I opened up two of the Alay or whatever.
Alay, Eternal Pilgrim.
Two? Yeah, two of them. With the shuffle your graveyard into your library flyer, the 6/6 flyer.
Did you also open an expedition?
I did. So it was
Craig's
a very lucky
a
night,
streak.
But I went undefeated that night because the black removal like was insane for my deck. And then with the white allies, you don't even have to attack. You can just kind of whittle them down and gain life. And I think I've done that 3 or 4 times in the drafts, and it's done well for me. I enjoy playing that way, and I'm allowed to kind of splash for colorless for some Eldrazi if I get them or anything like that, which has been super fun.
Yeah, that's another thing that makes this set really complicated is there's this 6th color, and like you don't get to just add as much of that as you want. So figuring out when to take those lands,
when to play the black guy that pay one life, add one colorless.
It's got colorless fire breathing, basically. Right. Yeah, and a lot of cards sort of, they either require a diamond mana to cast or they require diamond mana to activate their ability. And those... Yeah. So that's two different kinds of cards that use colorless in a different way. So when do I take those cards? When do I take the colorless mana-producing cards? It gets pretty complicated. I think there's going to be a lot of complexity to learning that aspect of it.
Yeah, it's cool. I'm glad that they're adding complexity to draft. Usually it is not filled with this much complexity. So it makes me happy to see a format that requires a little bit of time to figure out. I don't know if I like it yet, though, but we'll find out. The only way you can really find out is just by playing more and more and seeing where you sort of end up on it.
There are a ton of board stalls, and the games tend to go long, but I like grindy magic, so I like that. But I understand, you know, our friend Wes, he's like hates it so far because every game is like 5 creatures staring at 5 creatures and everybody going like, well, I can't attack.
Yeah, exactly.
Draw, go.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. So should we talk a little bit about Secret Partners before we jump into pet cards as well?
Oh, yeah. Secret Partners. We were talking about doing an episode about this, but I don't think it's a whole show.
You say this every time there's a topic, and there's always enough for a whole show.
This feels like there really isn't, because I went to sort of break down how to do a show about it, and I'm just like, there's not much meat there. We've had a lot of people ask about Secret Partners because we talked about it before and what it is, and so we just thought we'd go over what it is. In fact, Craig, you're the guy that introduced me to Secret Partners. We use it a lot when there's more players. So especially if there's like 6 or more players.
I learned how to do it when I got back into Magic a couple years ago around Innistrad. I brought all my cards to a card shop to sell them, and somebody convinced me to start playing. They were like, you have a lot of one-ofs. You should play EDH. So I started going there, and the only way that they would play at the card shop was Secret Partners because it, as you're about to say, it really speeds up games.
It's kind of like the blinds in poker almost. Like it creates action. So let's explain how it works. You want to explain?
Yeah. So Secret Partners, usually you want to play with 5 or more people, is essentially a format that has people on teams and teammates, and then you're facing off against another team and usually a lone wolf. So with 5 players, what you would do is you would take 5 cards, you would take 3 lands and 2 face-up cards. The 2 face-up cards just need to be the color of 2 of the lands. So you could have a white card, a plains, a black card, a swamp, and then a mountain. You would dish the cards out upside down so that no one knows what they are and show them to everyone. And you would say, all right, if you have a face, your card is going to be face up if it's not a mana. So if Craig got the black card, he would flip it up. You're like, I'm this. And then the person with the swamp would be on their team. But only the person on the swamp knows that Craig's on his team. And the same goes for the person that has the plains and the person that has the white face up card. And the red player is the lone wolf. And essentially, your goal is to win with your teammate, but you don't want to reveal who your teammate is because you're immediately going to essentially create the table and cause them to turn against you, knowing that you're the team.
You're not, so technically, you're not supposed to say words like, I'm your teammate.
Right.
You can sort of imply it if you want to and things like that, but you're not supposed to say explicitly, I'm your teammate. So in your example, the guy with the swamp would be, or the girl, would be teamed up with Craig. They can't go like, Craig, you and me, we're on teams. So Craig never 100% knows who the teammate is. He can imply it from the way that they're playing. But I've done things, and we all have, where you're not the teammate with the person, but you sort of like fake them out and they think you're their teammate, and that can sort of help you down the line. So even like early in the game, you do something for them and sort of give them a little look, and they're like, oh, that must be my teammate. And then for the whole rest of the game, they're playing incorrectly because you're not actually their teammate.
Yep. The best lone wolves are like, Josh, you're a very good political player. The best lone wolves are very political. Well, they'll be like, oh, well, you know, I'll help you out with this because, you know, blah, blah, blah. And then later in the game, attack that same person.
Yeah. So it's tough for sort of everyone. And the way that works is that the people that have face up cards know that they're not on the same team. And the people that have face down cards know that they are not on the same team. So it automatically gives you a person to swing at that you can safely attack and not mistakenly attack your teammate. So that in its own already speeds up the game by a significant amount.
Yeah, that drives action because it's not like a normal game of five player where you're going to be able to just sit there. You know, this person's my opponent.
Mm-hmm.
Then the three people with face down cards, I don't know which one of them's my opponent. So it makes it very easy when I've got to attack. I'm going to attack the person who I know is my opponent.
Yeah.
And same with the people with face down.
And we've even played two separate versions of this. One where your teammate stays in even if you get out. And the other where if one person's out, both players are out. And so just that variation, I think, is kind of fun to play around with too. I always advocate for staying in, but that's
because you don't
me.
Like to get knocked out when your opponent gets knocked out.
Oh my goodness, yeah.
But sometimes people just die in Magic.
And sometimes it's me that gets taken out too, so.
I mean, if you want the games to go faster, then you play the variation where if either teammate gets knocked out, you're both gone. And if you have a little bit more, you know, time, then you do it the other way.
I'd like to run the numbers on that and see if both teammates are out, if that's advantageous for the lone wolf.
I'm sure it probably is not, because if it just means one other team, a full team is in and they can immediately establish, oh, we're on the same team. The lone wolf just gets iced because it's 2v1 very quickly.
Right.
Yeah, I think it would be tougher for the lone wolf. Although, on the other hand, if they play it right, they only have to convince one person that they're on their team.
Yeah.
So we've definitely seen the thing where they're like, you know, the person's like, I don't know which one is my partner, and they can't say. And they're like, well, remember when I did this thing for you? And the guy's like, well, remember when I did this thing for you? And that, you know, it's like one of those movies where somebody's like facing off against their own clone, and then somebody else comes in and they're like, no, I'm the real one. No, I'm the real one.
It's face off, essentially. Yeah. The scene when the daughter's pointing the gun at the dad's. We
the
just watched that recently.
Off. The face.
I want to take his face off. Anyway, Secret Partners is a lot of fun. We recommend that you guys at least try it out. All you need to do is have, with five players, again, three lands and then two face-up cards that are not lands that match two of the lands.
And if there's six players, you can either do three teams or you can do two teams and two lone wolves. I don't know if the lone wolf wins if they're the last player standing. And if there's two lone wolves,
they're on the same team.
Oh, the lone wolves are on the same team?
Yes. Well, isn't that just the same as having two?
They're not lone wolves then. We didn't play it that way when we did six players.
Oh, that's how we used to play, which you're right. I didn't even really think about that. That's basically just a third team. The only difference is there's four face down and two face up.
Right.
So that way
lone wolves never really know who their teammate is.
Right. It makes it harder for the face up people to really realize who it is. But then again, if you're face up, you're much more likely to get out much sooner. So
clearly it's a variant. So you can play with all of these little like things, like the lone wolves could be on the same team. They could not be on the same team. You could have, when somebody gets knocked out, their whole team's out. Or you can say, oh, one teammate can be all by themselves at the end and that whole team wins. However you want to do it, I do recommend trying it. It does speed up games too. So definitely if you're five players or more, it will make it go quicker. Instead of getting one game in a night, you might get three.
Yep.
There's going to be a whole episode on this soon, isn't there?
I don't know. I don't know if there's anything else more to say.
Actually,
there is some strategy that's specific to Secret Partners, but I don't think it's worth going into here. It you know, it's you're just not going to do it all. It's like plane chase cards, right? You're going to do it sometimes to spice up your gameplay, but you're not going to do it that much.
Yeah, it definitely does help make games go faster. Anyway, we should move on to the main topic because it's a good one. Pet cards, guys. It's exciting. Cards that we love, cards that we put in our decks that other people may not have, cards that we sometimes even force into some of our decks. We've talked about some of these before. We had an episode with Wedge called Overperformers, and I'd say a lot of those cards sort of fit in the same category as these pet cards.
I definitely made my list and then went back and checked that episode and was like, crap, three of these cards I already talked about on that episode. So that was the episode with Wedge. It's called Overperformers. If you like this one, then it's almost like a prequel. to this episode.
It's episode 22, so we definitely go back in time. And I will just say that at least one of my cards is on my overperformers list.
Are you talking about a card twice?
Yeah, because it's just my favorite.
I know which one it is.
Yeah, it's my favorite. And it's my first. And that's where we will start. Friends, family, we are gathered here today to discuss Greater Gargadon.
Did Greater Gargadon pass away?
No. Well, it's suspended. it's on the way back. Greater Gargadon, if you guys don't know, it's 9 and a red for a 9/7 creature beast. You're like, wait a second, what? But here's the thing. It's got suspend 10, and all you have to do is pay 1 red mana to suspend this card. So you put it in exile, and every single upkeep, you remove a suspend counter from it. And when that suspend counter hits 0, you're able to cast Greater Gargadon. It has haste, and you can cast it for free. So on first glance, this looks terrible, but the main line of text that I love is the main part of this card. It says, sacrifice an artifact, creature, or land. Remove a time counter from Greater Gargadon. Activate this ability only if Greater Gargadon is suspended. And I like this a lot because you rarely have a sac outlet that can do 3 different things. Usually it's sacrifice a creature for something, sacrifice a land. In this case, sacrifice either an artifact, creature, or land. I love to play decks that steal things. I love to play decks that also are immune to things being stolen. And Greater Gargadon is one of those great ways to sort of prevent your deck from having things taken from them, or like your commander specifically, because you can sacrifice them at instant speed. And Greater Gargadon at the end of the day also just becomes a 9/7.
Yeah, that's, I think, one of the great things, because we always talk about sac outlets on the show and how important they are. And just, like, you would possibly run a card that just allowed you to sac things to no effect.
Mm-hmm.
That just said, sacrifice a permanent. That's it. That would probably be a decent card.
Yeah.
This one says that, except for that at the end of it, you get a huge creature.
Yeah, and the nice thing is the suspend cost is only 1 red. So you can play that. You don't play this turn 1, right? Because you don't have anything to sacrifice to it, and you don't really want the suspend counters to go all the way down to 0. So you wait until turn 4, turn 5, when you can play this and another creature and know that that creature has pseudo-protection against someone stealing it.
Now, is this an instant speed sac outlet, or is this a sorcery speed?
You can sac out. Okay. You can sacrifice at any time to remove a suspend counter.
At no cost.
Because that's huge, too. Because obviously, like the Sadistic Hypnotist, you know, someone like Sadistic Hypnotist, where you can only do it sorcery speed, the effect is huge, but the sorcery speed really keeps it, really holds it back quite a bit. Whereas the instant speed, and as you said, being able to sac 3 different permanent types, that's huge.
Yeah, it's very nice. Also, I enjoy this card quite a bit because, I don't know, it's just a Greater Gargadon. Look at the name.
Because at the end, you get a huge creature.
You get a huge creature. It's red. It fulfills all the requirements.
A 1 mana, too. So 1 mana, now you can
if someone plays Armageddon, then you, at the end of the day, it's kind of like Joyra, where you have something, even if all this stuff blows up, you still have something because you now, like, oh, the land got blown up. Sacrifice the Greater Gargadon. Get extra value off of that.
Yep.
It's almost like he's talking about the games we played last night, Craig, because you're talking about Sadistic Hypnotist, which last night he made me discard like 22 cards with.
Wow.
But I was playing Mizzix, so it was fine.
You still won?
Yeah. he made me discard like 22 cards over 2 turns, and I just said, yeah, okay, right before I discard, I'll draw 20 cards. And then I did the Joyra thing where you blow up everybody's lands when you have like 12 things suspended. Because I mean,
Decree of Annihilation?
Anyway, I had to tell those stories. Yeah.
Very nice.
Yeah.
Craig.
Yeah, Craig.
So you're up. My first is Helm of Possession. It's an artifact for 4 to cast. It says, you may choose not to untap Helm of Possession during your untap phase, and 2 and tap it. Sacrifice a creature, gain control of target creature as long as you control Helm of Possession, and Helm of Possession remains tapped. So what I really like about this card is, as Jimmy's card, it's a sac outlet that can be used the turn it comes out. We don't have to wait for Summoning Sickness or anything like that. As long as you have 6 mana, you can get it off. You can sacrifice a creature for it, but you also get to take control of somebody else's creature, and you don't have to give it up during your untap phase. So I'll use this card a lot in a lot of decks where I want to sacrifice creatures, like Kresh the Bloodbraided. I'll sacrifice one of my creatures to give him a bunch of counters, then take somebody else's creature, likely sac that to like a Goblin Bombardment or something like that, and just kind of continue the engine. So I really like this card just because it's super versatile, and if there's a threat on the board, I can take control of it. It's any creature, whether it's legendary or not. And I had this on the cutting block with a couple others like Empress Galena and Willow Seder. But
he
again,
just loves stealing people's stuff. Stealing stuff.
I mean, that was Greater Gargadon's looking better by the second place.
And the what really made this one stand out above those is being able to use it turn one and any creature, not
turn
just
one.
A legendary.
He means
the turn you cast.
I was like, holy crap, turn one.
You know, as long as you get a soul ring and a
Well, with the Tuck rule change, the control magic type effects, the take, you know, grab somebody else's creature and now it's yours, has just gotten way stronger because that's one of the few ways to shut off some of these really powerful decks.
Yep.
So make sure you run Greater Gargadon to dodge somebody's Helm of Possession.
Right.
And the like. Yeah.
But, but potentially even dodge your first card.
So, yeah, this mine is Dismiss into Dream. It's 6 and a blue for an enchantment. Each creature your opponents control is an illusion in addition to its other types and has, when this creature becomes the target of a spell or ability, sacrifice it.
That's great.
So Helm of Possession wouldn't take control of your thing anymore. It would yours because it's the only opponent's control. But if Craig tries to steal Jimmy's creature when I have Dismiss into Dream out, Jimmy just has to sacrifice the creature. So that's on the plus side for Jimmy there. But let's say Jimmy is playing Rafik and says, oh, I'm going to put this Sword of Feast and Famine on Rafik.
Womp womp.
That's an ability. You have to sacrifice Rafik when you do that.
Yeah.
Let's say that somebody is going to try to, like, tap down your guy with a Fate Stitcher. Oh, you have to sacrifice it. Fate Stitcher now says just destroy target creature. Actually, it's even better because even if it has Indestructible, you have to sacrifice it. So Dismiss into Dream, I don't see it very often, and I only have it in a couple of my decks. It does cost 7, but it screws up so many decks. Any Voltron deck that's trying to like target their own stuff, done. Can't do anything.
That's why I have Greater Gargadon, so you can sacrifice your permanents to Greater Gargadon.
But then
get rid of a time counter instead of...
Actually, I don't know. If you choose... No, it's not a target when you just choose to sacrifice something.
No, it's not actually a card in play yet. It's in exile. But when it came into play, if it got targeted with something, then you'd have to
sacrifice. Oh, yeah. I'm talking about the things that Greater Gargadon wants to sacrifice. They do not become targets.
The great thing about Dismiss into Dream is it doesn't affect yours. It's just a creature's opponent's control, so it's all upside. I guarantee you, if you play this card, you'll be really surprised. There'll be all these times when people do something, and you're like, sorry, you got to sack it now.
Yeah, and that's nice because everyone's spells turn into pseudo-removal spells as well.
Only against each other, but not against you.
Yeah.
Maze of Ith is a removal spell once this thing's out.
Corehaven, there you go.
Yep.
All right, my second card on the list is another one of my favorite cards. I play this in any single deck that has these colors. It's Dax Duplicate. 2, a blue, and a red. It's got the Greatest Thief in the multiverse on it, and it's turning something into a goblin. Like, it's everything I need. You may have Dax Duplicate enter the battlefield as a copy of any creature on the battlefield, except it gains haste and dethrone. So obviously this in Marchesa is an absolute house because you can copy something and then attack someone with it. But in general, the putting haste on a copied creature is way more powerful than I think a lot of people realize, because if you can steal someone's Craterhoof, you can steal someone's Kozilek, someone's Ulamog, all of a sudden you have a creature that's doing an insane amount of damage and havoc to someone's board.
That has the potential to get a +1/+1 counter on it the turn that it comes in.
Yeah.
Huge.
Huge. Especially with Marchesa out. Then it becomes
mana,
a recurring.
Right?
4 mana, yeah. 2 of red and a blue.
There's also a lot of creatures like, say, Empress Galena, which you mentioned earlier. Mm-hmm. If Craig plays Empress Galena and then you Dax Duplicate, yours is actually able to be used because it has haste, whereas he had to wait a rotation of the table. There's a lot of creatures like that where Dax Duplicate, it's almost like they play a creature and then you're like, I have your creature, but better.
Yeah.
That creature would have been good enough, or that card would have been good enough just with the haste, not even with the Dethrone. But the Dethrone just, oh my goodness.
It just makes it even
better. Yeah.
Over the top. That's why it's one of my pet cards. Not to mention, if you do copy something like an Empress Galena, you're just in such good shape because it's the same colors as yours, too.
Yep, exactly. You could actually use it.
Copy a Kiki Jiki, get double haste.
That's way better than haste.
Yeah, exactly. It's super hasty.
All right, Craig, you're number two.
So my number two is a white card from the dark called Preacher. It's 2 white and 1 other for a 1/1 creature. You may choose not to untap Preacher during your untap step. Tap him for as long as you control Preacher and he remains tapped. Gain control of target creature and opponent's choice he or she controls.
So you tap the Preacher, you target a player basically, and they choose one of their creatures and you just have control of it.
Right. So it gets around Hexproof. It gets around a few other things, but especially if they only have one creature. You know, there's a lot of times where he's only 3 mana cost. I can get him out early or, you know, right after a Wrath or something like that, get him out so that by the next turn, if somebody only plays one creature, now I take that. Or there's a lot of players who only play one creature in their deck, so now I take control of their creature. I can sack it. I can do whatever I want with it.
Yeah, if you're a Voltron deck or like Mizzix, even Narset because of the Hexproof, oh man, it would so hose Narset because Narset's not built to worry about it because of the Hexproof.
Right? Yep.
So, oh, that's actually really that's really good tech against Narset specifically.
Yeah, it is a very powerful card. I love that it forces them to choose a creature. Obviously, it's awful against token decks, but you can also just have this out and then wait for someone to cast another creature. And if you don't want that one, you're like, all right, I'll take your other creature that you have.
And you just don't target the token player, right? Because how often are you going to be in a game with three players or four players and everybody's playing a token deck? It's not going to be very often, yeah.
That's two steal spells from you, Craig. I'm sensing a theme over here.
We do know, like, Craig likes to copy and steal everybody's stuff.
It's a cheap way of doing it. I mean, somebody else plays something big and you're like, that's pretty, I'll take that.
Yeah, that costs you 10 mana. Yeah, I'll take it with my 3 mana card.
Four. Yeah.
Yeah.
My number two is Calming Verse. It's a sorcery. It costs 3 and a green. It says, destroy all enchantments you don't control.
Ugh.
Then, if you control an untapped land, destroy all enchantments you control. So, when you play Calming Verse, you just have to make sure you're tapped out.
Yeah.
In the old days with Mana Burn, this was much worse. Now there's no Mana Burn, so you can always choose to just tap all of your mana. You know, if you've got 5 mana, you can tap it all, paying for Calming Verse, even though it only costs 4, and then it won't destroy your enchantments also. It's just a one-sided enchantment. It's Vandal Blast.
Yeah, not to mention it's sorcery speed, so yeah. You're okay tapping all your mana because you could cast something potentially.
And you're in green. You know, green's the color that sort of taps out on its own turn.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, it's very powerful. It's basically, if you're looking for Vandal Blast, but for enchantments, this is one of the go-to cards.
And it's cheaper than Vandal Blast, mm-hmm. 3 in the green.
Yeah, there's not a ton of this type of effect. There's a lot of destroy all enchantments, mm-hmm. or all enchantments and artifacts. There's not a lot of destroy all enchantments your opponents control.
Anything where you can take yourself out of the equation, like Cyclonic Rift, Plague Wind, this. Right. I mean, I didn't even know this existed before you just said that. This is awesome.
It definitely is awesome. And I would hate to see this in a deck that plays a lot of enchantments because your game is over if this lands.
There's almost always 3 or 4. Somebody's got a burgeoning. Somebody's got a ley line of something, anticipation.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, somebody's got enchantment on their creature because they're playing Voltron. And it's just like, okay, let's clear that stuff out.
It's always enchantments that seem the most threatening, even though it's probably the artifacts because of the ramp aspect of it. The enchantments always do something where you're like, ugh.
Well, a Mirari's Wake totally warps the game in that person's favor. There are so many busted enchantments like Doubling Season, Parallel Lives, that if you don't deal with them, then you're very quickly losing much faster than you would be. All right. My number three. Haha, and it costs 3 mana as well. It's Mimic Fat.
Oh, yeah, this card's good.
Why don't people play this card more?
It sees play. It's not as big in our playgroup, but...
It certainly is not an expensive card, which is sort of why it's one of my pet cards. Usually, you can't say something like Consecrated Sphinx, because one, everyone plays it, and two, it's best kept secret.
My pet card is Sol Ring.
Yeah.
It's the same thing, yeah.
We should do an April Fool's episode with just that. Like, my must underplay card is Sol Ring.
I was writing my list for all these pet cards, and I think I had like 50 cards on there. And of course, like, there were ones that I was like, this is not a pet card. Like,
that's just a really good card. No, Mimic Fat is, it's easy play, but not a ton.
And it does get you pet cards if you think about it. So it has Imprint on it. Whenever a non-token creature dies, you may exile that card. If you do, return each other card exiled with Mimic Vat to its owner's graveyard. So it can only hold, quote-unquote, one creature under this card at one time. Otherwise, it returns the other cards you exile with it to the appropriate graveyard. But for 3 mana, generic mana, you can tap it. And it says, put a token onto the battlefield that's a copy of the exiled card. It gains haste. Exile it at the beginning of the next end step. It's repeatable. If you have a way to untap Mimic Vat, you can do this multiple times in a turn. It's great. It gains haste. You can swing with whatever this card is. It could be a Crater Hoof Behemoth again. It could be so many creatures that do tons of amazing stuff. It could even be Mole Drifter, and I'd be happy.
Oh, that's the best.
But the really nice thing about this is that you get to essentially exile a creature as soon as it dies, no matter what the creature is. And if it's something like in a Carador deck that you really don't want that player returning, well, guess what? Mimic Vat is sort of an answer to that, and you also sometimes just get a sweet creature from it. So you could steal someone's awesome Enter the Battlefield triggers. I think Acidic Slime would be sort of my top choice for a Mimic Vat target.
Yeah, Six Climb's great. I think the fact that you can take anyone's, so somebody else plays a cool creature, you're like, oh, well, I want that.
Sepulchral Primordial has been a good one for you in the past as well.
Oh, yeah. In the cube. My
goodness. Sepulchral Primordial with on a Mimic Bat is just like...
That basically raises dead from everybody's graveyard. So you get, like, every time you do it, you get, like, four creatures or something.
Yeah, it's pretty nice. Yeah. You can also do this on defense, so it's always a chump blocker. You can put out some crazy stuff with it, so I really enjoy Mimic Bat.
Seems great. Seems I like great. It.
All right. So my number three is Lurking Predators. It's a enchantment from M10 for 2G and 4O. It says, whenever an opponent casts a spell, reveal the top card of your library. If it's a creature card, put it onto the battlefield. Otherwise, you may put that card at the bottom of your library.
Whoa.
It's so good. Oh, it's so good. Every time you get this out, I'm just like, I can't play any spells. Because if I do... He just gets free dudes.
So Craig's typically play this in a lot of like creature heavy decks like Caridor or Rune. I think Scion of the Ur-Dragon has it in there just because I have a lot of things on a stick that I like to go for. And what I really like about this card is it's almost built in value because it happens on the cast trigger. So let's say they cast an instant to get rid of that enchantment, right? I still get at least one effect off of it.
Yeah.
Which if I had topped or something like that, or Miri's Guile or anything like that to kind of stack the top of my deck, I get a creature out of it. And typically in those decks, I'm running creatures that are bigger than six. So it's almost a way of cheating out a creature guaranteed. And then in the case that they don't get rid of it with the first spell that they cast, I mean, this card has gotten me 15-20 creatures before.
Yeah, sometimes it just goes crazy. If somebody plays that and then like Armageddon's or something,
ugh,
then you just never can catch up because you're gonna have to play some spells just to get back in the game, and by that time the person's just gotten all these free creatures and it's like
Are you gonna do, stop players from playing spells? They have to continue developing their board and just hope that Craig doesn't hit something crazy off of it, which in the decks that like this card, oh boy, get ready to party.
The second part, the May ability to tuck it at the bottom, just adds a little bit more value because if it was a must ability, it makes it a little bit worse, right? Like, let's say you come across your answer that you really need. You can leave that at the top and not get any more free creatures if you want.
Good card. Good card.
Very good card. Yeah, having Scry on there is quite nice.
All right, my number three is Righteous Aura. It's one and a white for an enchantment. It says you can pay white and pay two life. The next time a source of your choice would deal damage to you this turn, prevent that damage. This
very,
card...
Very Josh card here.
Yeah, super, super Josh card. This card's like really innocuous, but it, when you start seeing the interactions, it starts making sense why it's so good. For one, it negates commander damage. So we've all been in that game where somebody's off to the side and they have... You know, whatever their general is, and all of a sudden they go boom, 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 Adrazi Conscription, double strike it, attack you with flying, hit you for 30 commander damage, you're dead. And you're like, I was at 40, you know, and I didn't even know that could happen. This saves you in that situation because you just pay the two life, prevent the damage, and you actually didn't even take any commander damage.
Yeah.
You took two normal damage.
It's not reduce that damage to two.
It's prevent that damage. And then let's say Blightsteel Colossus comes out. It swings at you. You don't take any infect. You prevent the damage. You don't take any damage from it. You just take two regular damage. Let's say Mizzix does that thing that Mizzix likes to do, which is earthquake everybody for 40.
Ooh, very nice. That's true.
You take two. You don't take 40. And it only costs one white mana to hold up. So every time you get Righteous Aura out, you just hold up the one white mana, and you basically can't die. Because you can take... And the thing to do is not to prevent little chunks of damage. It's just to prevent those big chunks. Yeah, card's really good.
Yeah, and it's one of those cards that will just save you and give you those extra turns. And while the person that's trying to burn people out or ice them with a commander is not going to be looking to you.
I don't think Mizzix can beat you, not in the same way. It can do it with Gutter Snipe or something with this out. It's one of those cards also because it says pay two life. It hasn't been balanced for our format, right? That should say pay four life in our format.
Absolutely.
Yeah, absolutely. Good call. Okay, my number four, Creeping Renaissance. Craig, you introduced me to this card, actually, and I've since put it in a lot of my decks, specifically ones that are more tribal themed or
foil.
Have... And foil, yes.
I saw
absolutely.
You invested heavily in foil when I was looking through your binder.
It was very cheap.
An entire page, if not two. Right? You have
two pages of foil creepy
if
renaissance?
No, not two pages.
You have seven pages of foil creepy renaissance?
I have an entire binder that's only foil creepy renaissance.
You have expedition creepy renaissance?
Yes. I pulled an expedition creepy renaissance at our last Oath draft. It was a blast.
I love this.
So this card is great in tribal decks, decks like Super Friends decks. It says for three green, a sorcery, choose a permanent type, return all cards of the chosen type from your graveyard to your hand. So that could be instant sorceries, creatures, enchantments, planeswalkers, you name it. And the best part is you can flash it back for five green and do it all over again. So Creeping Renaissance, I think when I want a regrowth effect, I want it to actually impact my hand.
This is a regrowth effect.
If you, for instance, have a lot of instants in your deck and you've just blasted them all through, Creeping Renaissance could get you like five cards back in an instant, which is really powerful. I love the value. I love, obviously, regrowth effects in general because I love getting double use out of card. So Creeping Renaissance, one of my friends.
Super good card.
I use this a lot in my green-white tokens deck because I run a lot of enchantments that give them, you know, plus X or whatever, or extra effects, and using this guy for enchantments is huge.
Yeah, especially if you've got a deck with ones that people have to get rid of.
Right.
It's great because it's you can run out a doubling season, try and get as much value out of it, and knowing that's going to get removed and that you can Creeping Renaissance it back and then do it again.
And it's not limited to just enchantments. Like you said, you use it for planeswalkers. I'm running a lot of planeswalkers in that deck, a lot of instants. You know,
I use it in
like
Titania
that.
For lands.
Yeah, exactly. Oh. And the second time you use it, you can do it for something else too.
Yeah,
you don't
exactly.
have to do it for sorceries or instants or whatever again.
Yeah,
you can
really
choose
good
a new permanent.
It's a great card.
Yeah. I know, guys. I know it's great.
It's a good card.
It's a good card. All right, Craig, what you got?
So my number four is Telepathy.
Oh, God, this is such a great card, too.
It's an uncommon from M10 for one blue enchantment. It says your opponents play with their hands revealed.
But not you.
This card is so awesome when you play it because it changes the whole game.
The entire game, right?
I
play it a lot in my Infect decks and decks like Memnarch or Talrand where I want to know what my opponents have so I know what to counter or, you know, how to play around whatever my threats are that are not yet on the board. And what I really love about this card is you can really create a political game out of something that wasn't really there before. And for one blue, you can get it out on turn one, so you know every play that's about to come out. You can talk about what other people are going to do. It's really worked a lot in my favor. And it's one of those things where it's like you can't really – nobody can really come after you and be like, oh, that's OP. Like everybody that I've brought up this card to is like, yeah, but it's not that good. And in my head, I'm like – yeah, but it like it really is.
It's the bigger the game gets, the better it is too, because your ability to manipulate everything is so much better when you have that knowledge. For one, let's say you've got a creature you're going to attack with. Well, you know which people have removal spells and which don't.
Yep.
You know and then you counters, also know who has counters, who has answers to other people's things. You can be like, why don't you kill that Consecrated Sphinx? You know, normally people can just be like, I don't have anything that can do it. And but you absolutely, you're like, yes, you do. You just want them to win, you know.
Yeah, it's great leverage.
Oh, it's crazy how good. I love it when you play it because I get to still have that same ability, even though I didn't play the card, except I don't know your hand, but I know everybody else's.
But a lot of people forget that one person's left out. You know what I mean? It's like, oh, I can see what he's playing and blah, blah, blah. And then once somebody gets rid of it, it's like, okay, you know, if you really want to be that player, you could be like, well, let me, you know, take a picture of each one of your hands before, you know, or whatever.
Right. No one's doing well.
Yeah.
There's probably some people that would do that, but
you
in
could,
Commander.
Yeah. Oh, there's absolutely people that do that.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a cool card.
Real cool.
It totally makes the game fun, too, which is a great thing, you know, in Commander, just to do in general, is to have cards that the whole thing that it does really is just make the game more fun. It changes up how the normal dynamic of the game works.
Yeah. I actually didn't know this card existed, and I used to play Urza's Glasses.
Yeah, so you just look.
Instead, but then I found out that was you had to tap it because it was a mono artifact and whatnot, and then I found out that this card existed. And
you just want all the informations.
All of it.
Give me it.
Not to mention, Telepathy was in our Metamai, the Ageless deck at the Community Cup.
Nice. Well, Metamai has Telepathy. I mean,
he
it was
definitely,
obvious.
Yeah, exactly.
My number, what are we on, four? Four is Mercurial Chemister. It's three and is it, so three blue and a red, for a creature, wizard, human, 2/3. It says, pay a blue and tap the Chemister, draw two cards, or pay a red and discard a card, and Mercurial Chemister deals damage to target creature equal to the discarded card's converted mana cost.
It's got everything it needs on one card.
It's card draw and it's removal on one card. It's activated ability, so it combos well with my other favorite card, like Fate Stitcher.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you want card draw in your deck, but you love card draw that's on another utility, right?
Right.
Because card draw is great, but at a certain point you have to do things.
Mm-hmm.
And this does things. It starts killing creatures.
Yeah, and it uses the cards you draw as well.
Yeah, if you draw two cards and then you use one of them to kill a creature, you're still up a card.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah.
I'm definitely putting Anger or Wonder into the graveyard with this guy if I'm ever going to play him.
Yeah, for sure.
All right, my numero cinco. It's a card we all know. I probably put this on my overperformance as well. Actually, did I? We have to check.
Jimmy's
checking
really
fast. It is not. What was I thinking back then? Gosh, I'm such a better player now, guys. I'm just kidding.
Gosh,
Craig. It's Concordant Crossroads. And every time I talk about this card, everyone almost always goes, nah, I don't see why you like this card so much.
This card is awesome.
You almost got that out of me when you said it. I'm like, but it gives everybody else's haste too.
Yeah.
People worried way too much about that.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
You're going to play it. Go ahead. You go.
It costs a green. All right. It costs one for an enchantment. It's a world enchantment. It says all creatures have haste. And here's the thing. Your deck is built to use this card, and your deck is built to win with this card. If you're playing a deck that does not care about haste, then they do not benefit. And it's honestly such a good card to me because it just usually will take the game for you if you know when to play it. Because, if you want to drop a Craterhoof Behemoth, that's a big mana cost to play a huge creature. People can see it coming. You play something like Concordant Crossroads, you can play this and something else in the same turn and really get the maximum use out of this. I play it in my Dragons deck. I play it in a lot of decks. They just want to get in there like Animar. And it's a great surprise, too, because people, usually for one green, you can't get something this powerful.
Well, and green's not really a haste color. Red's a haste color.
Right.
So that's another reason they don't see it coming. And like you said, the one green is what makes it great, because you don't play it and then just say go. You hold it in your hand until you're going to make a big play, and then you play Concordant Crossroads also.
Yep.
So after you do that thing where, what's that new green card where you make a 4/4 for every creature everybody else has, and then your 4/4s fight all their guys? How good is that with Concordant Crossroads? Because you make like 50 4/4s.
Oh, right. Yeah. It's Azuri's Predation.
Yeah. That with Concordant, think of that.
Yep.
You know?
Concordant Crossroads makes a lot of sense in any sort of token deck.
Yeah.
Yeah, like, absolutely.
Anything that's going to dump like 20 guys out all in one turn. The problem with that is then you say go and hope that you still have 20 guys when it comes back around to your turn.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Azuri's Predation is amazing. For each creature your opponents control, put a 4/4 green beast, and then each of those beasts fights a different one of those creatures. Yeah, you kill a bunch of things, drop
and
a Concordant Crossroads.
Swing at everybody.
A ton. You can also do this with the, I forget what it is, it's the Descent of the Dragons, I believe, where you can kill any number of creatures and you put some dragons in. It's pretty fun. So I like this card a lot, obviously. It's won me many, many games. And every time someone says they don't think it's a good card, I can only smile and say, well, I hope I play it against you and show you why it's great.
I'm sorry, but you're wrong.
I do have to say I have played it in Infect and Tokens.
Oh, it's amazing in Infect.
Craig and his Infect decks.
Craig, why don't you talk about your next card, speaking of which.
So speaking of Infect, my my last card is what I like to use a lot as a game ender. And it's a 1 black instant. It's called Tainted Strike. Its target creature gets +1/+0 and gains Infect until end of turn.
On the page, this looks awful. And then I thought about it, and now I really like it.
Absolutely. So
it's good.
For a 1 black instant, if anybody at any point of the game is being attacked by a creature that's 9 or more damage or getting trampled over for 9 or more damage, you slap this on there. Even if they're like they're gonna dominate the board, sometimes they can't prevent 9 damage. You slap this on one creature, and it's over.
Well, a lot of people are like, I take it.
Yeah, exactly. Because
they know it's not going to kill them.
Right.
So they just decline to block, even though maybe they could, but they would have to chump. And it's just like, it's only 9 damage. I'm at 32 life. Like, I'll go down to 23. Big deal.
Now, what I really love to do with this is combine it with something like Chandra's Ignition or Soul's Fire. And now, not only do you
kill everybody.
With Chandra's Ignition, you just put it on a 9 or more creature and kill everybody. With
unless they have Righteous Aura.
Right, unless they have Righteous Aura.
We should play a game where we only play our pet cards against each other. Josh would deck himself with Mercurial Chemister. Yeah. I would have Haste on Dax Duplicate, which already has Haste, and Greater Gargan, which you'd already has Haste.
You'd have a Hasty Dax Duplicate, or sorry, Mercurial Chemister.
Yeah. You would have a Hasty. Yeah, that's pretty good.
Well, then Craig would steal it with Breacher.
Ugh. But then I'd have to sack it to your creature. To your
I would sack it to Greater Garganon. I think Greater Garganon wins this battle. Just saying.
That's a good point.
Yeah, Tainted Strike is sick. That's amazing. It's so true. So many times people just take that damage. It's like, all right, cool. You die. And the best part is, Craig, you made someone else kill someone with Infect. Exactly. You didn't even do it.
Right.
Master level trolling.
Master level trolling.
It's up there.
All right, my number five is Sitinel. Hierophants? Shivam, need ya. Don't know how to pronounce that word. Sitinel Hierophants.
I think it's right. I'm just going to go on the limb, and it's right. You did it.
I do not think it's right, but whatever. Three and a green for a creature human druid. It's been oracled. It's a 3/2, so a 4-mana 3/2. It says, creatures you control have, tap, add green to your mana pool. It makes all your dudes into land elves also. What?
They pretty don't even good. Have to be a certain creature type?
Nope.
What?
Yeah, in an elf deck, this is sort of the ultimate card you want to drop because...
Just any token deck, right?
Tokens,
so
right?
So you just play, like, I don't care, you got 9 soldiers. You play Sentinel Hierophants, and now you've got 9 extra mana that turn.
Everything has Convoke, basically.
Yeah.
A little, not it's quite green Convoke, only. But kind of.
It's green only.
Yeah.
Yeah, wow. This card goes insane very quickly. Because a lot of times you do that, and then you use that extra mana to make more tokens.
Yeah.
And if you have Concordant Crossroads out, you can just very quickly get into... If you have, like, X token spells, so, like, pay something in X and make X tokens.
Now, let's say...
If you have two of those, all of a sudden, and a Haste Enabler, you're just like, boom, boom, make a million dudes.
Is this an enchantment?
No, it's a creature.
It's a creature.
Yeah. It's a creature. Okay, yeah. So he stays on the... So it's a permanent. Yep. So the tokens that do enter... do actually have that ability. It's not like you instant put this on the stack and then your creatures come out and they don't have it.
Yep.
Nope. And still all your creatures have it as long as the Sentinel whatever.
The Hierophants have it as well. Every creature, So pretty sweet.
Yeah, very good card. Again, only if you're making lots and lots of creatures. But right.
It's kind of got Gaia's Cradle levels of power level.
Yeah, it's just not a land.
Yeah, exactly.
You can't play it on turn two, you know?
But hey, on the budget.
A lot of, yeah, exactly. That's a good point. It's sort of a budget Gaia's Cradle, if you will.
Yeah, good call. All right, so that does it for our top five pet cards of the moment.
You know what I love about these lists? They're so us. So let's see. Look at Jimmy's list. He's got a huge red creature. He's got two things that have or give haste.
Yep. And two things that steal or create clones of creatures.
Yep. Okay, so let's look at Craig's. Craig's got, of course, Infect, and then a bunch of stuff that steals your stuff, and then something that looks at everybody to see what is in their hand.
Yeah.
And then I've got, like, a bunch of stuff that, like, basically stops everybody else from doing what they want to do. Right? So I destroy all your enchantments, make it so I don't take any damage, and anytime you target one of your creatures, it dies. Like, I don't have a single way to kill anyone in mine.
Mercurial Chemist, no, it's only creatures.
Yeah.
Sentinel Hierophant, so you just make a lot of mana and then, I don't know, play Hurricane?
That's exactly what I would do. Whatever you do with a bunch of mana, which is, exactly. Anything.
Yeah.
It's so, like, it's exactly our personalities encapsulated in five cards.
Well, to the listeners, we encourage you guys to also make your own pet cards list and see if it really reflects your sort of play style. It's a great way to do sort of a litmus test, I suppose, on who you are as a player.
Psychoanalysis.
Yeah, exactly. You're looking at the ink blobs, aren't we?
Yeah, we want to see your list of your five pet cards. Please comment on Rocket Jump or on YouTube. You can email them to us, commandcast@rocketjump.com, or you can just put it up on Twitter. You can find us at commandcast, at JF Wong, at Josh Lee Kwai. We would love to hear what your pet cards are.
Yeah,
it's an interesting
absolutely.
Exercise, too, because, like, doing this myself, as I said, I wrote down 50 cards, and then to really narrow it down, because you guys were like, five cards, I really had to think about it to really narrow it down and be like, no, that's too powerful. That's not quite a pet card. That's really, like, characterized as, like, just good.
Yeah. It's great. Hopefully you guys get to play some of these in your decks as well. Let us know if also your pet cards are our pet cards. It's always fun to know.
Always fun to know. Also, we're going to learn a lot of cool pet cards from you guys.
Yes, that's why we did this episode, honestly.
Yeah, it's really just research for a future pet cards episode.
Two or three new cards that I never knew about tonight. So
Tainted Strike is definitely going to be a card I will get a couple of.
Oh, no.
Tainted Strike is definitely going to be a card that I'm going to live in fear of.
Yes.
At all times absolutely. Now. Every time someone attacks me for 9 or more, I'm going to be like, What if somebody has tainted strike?
better
everyone be just holds right. One black like, up and
search that righteous aura and
yeah.
All right, time for the end step where we talk about something cool outside the world of magic.
So I recently saw a movie, The Big Short, which is about the housing crisis. It's got an all-star cast. I really didn't think much about it going into this movie, which I've heard from a few people really makes a great movie. Like if you don't think that something's going to be good when you go in, it turns out to be much better. If you're thinking true. It's going to be really
so
good,
true.
It tends to suck. So, you know, I went into this movie in the theaters kind of thinking like, yeah, I don't really know. My girlfriend wanted to see it, whatever. So go to see it. And of course I live through this, you know, like we all live through this and mm-hmm. It was,
yeah, it's the subprime mortgage bubble, right?
Exactly. Which happened in 2007, 2008. And it kind of follows these guys who played that market and bet on the U.S. to make this mistake and to not catch that the housing market was in this bubble and whatnot. And
it sounds boring.
It sounds very boring. But when you get into it and you see the levels of, I want to say corruption, you know, like there's a lot of things that, you know, I don't want to get super political, but there certainly seem to be some things in this country and others that, you know, times have gotten ahead of themselves where we just haven't been able to properly regulate with the amount that we've been able to expand as humans.
But and, was it compelling? Because that sounds like a documentary. Like, I'm just right. saying as a person who, like you, before you went and saw it, was like, so, I don't know. I don't know if I want to see a movie about that. But
right. I'm super into documentaries. It did not play out like a documentary, though. Like, there was a lot of suspense. There was a lot of, since you lived through it, there was a lot of like, oh, yeah, I remember that. And, oh, wow, that's cool that these guys were doing this during that time. And it just kind of makes you remember everything that happened. And it was very theatrical. It didn't feel like a documentary. You're definitely rooting for a certain person throughout the whole thing, if not a few, and definitely kind of condemning a few others. So it definitely felt like a movie. It was long, but it didn't feel long.
Mm-hmm.
It was just a very good movie from start to finish. And I actually like judge a lot of movies by if I would watch them again. And I could see myself watching this movie 3, 4, 5 more times.
Wow. Okay. Wow. Sold. Now I'm going to go see it.
Absolutely. And you know, the nice thing is also it's Adam McKay. He did Step Brothers, which was one of my favorite movies. So it is interesting
to see.
The
guy that did Step Brothers?
Yeah, it's great to see him do something.
It does
something
not have that feel.
That's much more serious. It's a lot of fun.
It's got a crazy cast.
Yeah, right? Absolutely.
So, yeah. Okay. Make sure to check out our sister podcast, The Masters of Modern. Alex and Ben killing it lately. They had BDM on their last episode. If you want to catch up on all things modern, listen to the Masters of Modern podcast. You can find them on rocketjump.com right next to us under the podcast tab, or you can follow them on Twitter at the MMcast.
And make sure you check out our videos online at youtube.com/the Command Zone podcast. Our editor for the show, Terry Robertson, really kills it. He does a great job showing all the pictures and oftentimes little sort of Easter eggs in the videos as well.
I love Terry. He's been adding his own little flair to the videos, and they've got a ton of personality now. They're way better than they used to be, even when I was editing them.
Yeah.
I can't give higher praise than that.
Yeah, Terry,
you're
killing it.
The videos are fantastic, guys. Like, I've been watching a lot of these at work. And
like Kitchen Table Fables? Did you see those yet?
You guys didn't even tell me that you guys came out with those yet. I didn't
we
even
tweeted
know that
a
those
bunch.
Had
dropped. We tweeted all over the Twitter net.
I need to pay more attention to Twitter.
Come on, man.
So tweet me out at Craig.
We can Facebook. We can Facebook Craig, and he will never respond. Like never.
Yeah, it's true.
This is true.
It is tough to get a hold of.
I stay off Facebook because
it doesn't go on the internet.
It's just like everybody being like, "Look at my life, blah blah blah," and it, like a
yeah,
lot
Craig,
of it, I just
look
don't
at our
care.
Life. We just
I'm
released
sorry
Kitchen
about,
Table
but
Fables.
I just don't care about your baby that you
he doesn't
just
care about Kitchen Table Fables,
and he does not care about babies. You heard it here first, right, guys. Also, special thanks to Jeffrey Palmer for the Living Card animations that are on the videos we were just talking about. You can find him at Living Cards MTG. Please send all these people our love and check them out. And hey, you know what? We'll see you next time.
Peace.
Thank you for your attention. For further inquiries, send an email to commandcast@rocketjump.com. Or ask us on Twitter at JF Wong and at Josh Lee Kwai. See you later, alligator.
Greetings, humans.